Morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Our almost afternoon for you. It's late over there.
At 10:30.
Yeah.
How's it going?
All right, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm tired.
Why?
Oh, we had a busy day yesterday. We went to the Niagara Falls Comic Convention in
Oh.
Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
It was yes, but I believe it or not, we've gone many times. But I actually did I enjoyed the Nickel City one actually more. Just circumstance, I think it was just a little bit more to look forward to. Is Chris going to be joining us today?
Yeah, I'm trying to add him.
I'll talk about it more when he comes on, because I just wanted to mention things to both of you. But I mean, it was fun. I had a good time. My
You don't
wife and
sound
her
too
husband comes.
enthusiastic.
You know what? I didn't really get a lot of stuff.
That's not always a bad thing.
No, it's not. I don't know.
Oh, was the whole family with you?
No, just my wife and cousin. They
Oh.
kind of they go and look at pops while I look at comic books.
Well, no wonder you weren't buying a lot of comics. Your spouse was there. I bet things would have been very different.
Very true, Mike. Very true. I did buy I did get quite a few Flash comics. I needed about five to have 200 and up.
Yeah.
And five, one, two, three, six. I needed six to get 200 and up, and I bought five of them there. So that was productive. So I only
Yeah.
need number 214, and then I have 200 and up. And then after that, I'll start picking and choosing and getting some older stuff. You can get a lot of Flash without spending like lots and lots of money. $100 or less, you can buy quite a range.
Yeah. Chris, are you there?
Hello. Hi,
There you are.
Christopher.
He's
I just like to
silent.
if you, I like to answer and just creep in the background if you guys are talking when I answer.
Oh, you should announce yourself. I am here.
I'm more of a sneaky type.
Yeah, he's peeking in the window, is what he's doing.
Yes. I was just telling Mike I went to the Niagara Falls show yesterday,
Oh,
Chris.
okay. Yeah.
I actually like the Nickel City one better, but I think because here's the reason why. All right, I had talked to you about it a while back, Chris, that I was gonna try to get my name in for George Perez head sketch that you have to do like a month prior, right? And then he has them ready for when you actually get there. So I'm not going to go through the whole story, but basically his agent said to submit it at midnight on this particular day, so I did. And then he responded back saying, "No, that's not the right day. It's the next day." So I said, "Okay." So I know I have to do it again. So I went ahead and did it the next day. And then I realized, well, I don't know. Like, does he respond back? Does he tell you if he got it? Does he just tell you if you didn't, if you did get it and you don't hear if you didn't or what the so I wrote him, and he's like, yeah, he's like, I've been in bed all day, I'm not feeling well. However, this evening I'm gonna go through all of them and I respond to everyone. I said, okay, great. So one day passes, the next day passes, the next day passes. I'm like, what is going on? How sick is this guy, right? So finally, I wrote him. And I said, when are we gonna hear back? And he said, well, I sent them all that night. So if you didn't receive one from me, it's either in your junk mail or I never got a request from you. Either way, all the slots are full. So I definitely sent the email. I never got his response. It wasn't in my junk mail. So I don't know what happened, but apparently they never even got my request. So that was fine. So I went there yesterday with the intention of going there, and they set up something because Mike, I think what con were you at that George was there? Was it Chicago?
Yeah, C2E2.
Okay, so they know how crazy it is being that it's his like last time that he's gonna like go around. So they decided to implement a ticket system, kind of like a fast pass. So you go, you pick up your ticket, it tells you what hour time frame, actually half hour time frame, that you should come line up to get your stuff signed. Okay. So unfortunately, the show started at 10. We didn't get there until 11. I ran up there, all the tickets were gone. So I wasn't able to get anything signed. I wasn't able to speak to him. I was really, really bummed out about that because, as I've mentioned many times before, he's probably my favorite artist of all time. So I was a little bit bummed out. I kind of let that depress me for the next little bit when we were there. But then we walked around and we had a good time. And I bought 2 Captain America books. And I bought, what did I say, Mike? 4 or 5 Flash comics, yeah. So I only need a handful. And one of the caps that I got, Mike, was number 110, which was the lowest number I still needed. Yeah. And actually is up there in price. It's the first appearance of Viper.
Yeah.
And it's just been, I mean, I remember not long ago, it was pricey, but it was less than 100. Well, now, I mean, it's going up closer to 200.
Why is that?
I have no idea. I just noticed it recently in the past like year that it's just been going up and up. I don't know that there's any reason, but it's definitely been on the upswing. So I went ahead and I did find one real nice shape. I got that. So I really only need, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, well, according to this, 5 more issues of Cap, and I'll have the whole run.
Yay.
So we're almost there.
Then you get to work on Tales of Suspense.
Yes, because I only have maybe like 4 issues of that.
It never
and
ends.
I do want all of them from when he joined the book, and I do have that first one.
First appearance of Viper, I think it's more driven by the cover with the Hulk on it.
Yeah, I was wondering. But like, even if you look at the database, you look at that little up and down chart there.
Yeah.
I mean, see that it was that's like right around.
That's not a good trend, though. That's a good trend according to them. But
yeah, no,
that's
I know.
A good, that's a trend according to Atomic Avenue, but God knows how much traffic they get.
It's true, but I have noticed that myself. Like just in looking at the books,
that is a big jump.
I'm gonna
like
walk down
the only time
to
it
Atomic
dropped is
Avenue.
2017. That's when you needed to buy it in 2017.
Yeah, that's right.
I have
but
this
I,
book in
I kept
some
sitting
other
on
form.
It.
It's like a Marvel Superheroes reprint or something to that effect.
Right. Yeah. So now my lowest number is that I still need is 112, and the highest number I still need is 144, and I only need 4 or 5 books, so I'm almost done.
Yay!
So we're gonna go to the Fan Expo in Toronto at the end of August. So that will be my mission, is to see if I can get those whatever I still need by
what
August.
What you should be doing is going to Heroes Con for Father's Day. That's what you should be doing.
Yeah, you're right. Why is it always got to be on Father's Day?
That's a good day. That's when you should be treated with what you want to do.
I'm going to have to take the whole family then.
Do the Bill Bomer thing. That's how he gets away with it.
I know. And he doesn't bring his family?
No.
Man, and his wife tolerates that?
She does her thing sometimes, and he does his thing.
Gotcha.
Sometimes you need to do your things.
Yeah, you do. That's very true. Oh, but we did go to the I went to 2 panels. This is all I'll talk about, and then I'll be done with talking about the con. I went to 2 panels. One was
I have another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What does your wife do does she go to the panels with you?
She went to the first panel. She did not go to the other one. Her and her cousin did one more walk around to look for a pop. Stacy wanted to get a Lion Cat pop.
And lion all cat? They, what is that? The Lion King? What is it?
No, the lying, like telling.
Oh, the lying cat from Saga.
Saga, yeah.
Yeah.
But all they had were the bloody faced ones that were
Did
like.
Did she read Saga?
Yeah, she just read all of the collections. her that cousin that came with us actually bought all the collections, so she lent them to Stacy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She's read a few things. She's read Saga.
But does she enjoy it?
Oh, she loves it. Yeah. She's read a lot of Fables. She's read all of Why the Last Man and all of Sandman.
Yeah, there was a time when Barb read comics, but that's past. She did read Why the Last Man and DMZ.
Why the Last Man was great.
And I think she read the other Brian K. Vaughan, Ex Machina. She read some of that.
Yeah. So the first panel we went to was the Cobra Kai panel.
Nice.
Did either one of you watch the TV show?
I saw the ones that were available for free.
Yeah, it's very good. It's a very good show. But Johnny Lawrence and I'll do the free trial, and we watched it that way. But Johnny Lawrence and John Kreese were there, so they were taking Q&A. And Johnny Lawrence is his real name's what? William Zabka. He is very funny. He was telling stories and stuff. Very, very entertaining. We had a great time watching the two of them talk.
And that's the panel your wife probably went to.
That is exactly right. I still had to kind of convince her to go.
Yeah.
Even though she liked we haven't watched the second season, but we both really enjoyed the first season. I don't think it was necessarily anything she thought she needed to see, but since, you know, it's something that she's familiar with, they went along, and her cousin haven't even watched any of the show, but they both absolutely loved the panel because it was just really, really entertaining.
Yeah, that's good.
They're very, very good in those situations, especially, William Zabka is really entertaining. So that was a lot of fun. And then the one that I went by myself was the last panel of the day at 5 o'clock. It was Jim Starlin, George Perez, and his first name? Joe Rubenstein. They all did Infinity Gauntlet together.
Uh-huh.
George did the first three issues or whatever. They build it as Infinity Gauntlet, but people asked all range of questions to all three of them. So it was a lot of fun for me to actually sit and listen to some stories. So that was cool.
So this was the Niagara Falls Con?
Yeah.
It's on the Canadian side.
Everything good in Niagara Falls is on the Canadian side, Mike. So when you come visit, we'll go over. We'll be on the American side. We'll look around.
Mm-hmm.
We'll check out the falls, and then we'll walk. We'll walk or drive over to the Canadian side.
That means you need a passport, right?
Or an enhanced. I don't. Do you have enhanced licenses there?
I don't think so.
Offer those things. I wonder if New Mexico does, because they're attached. That you can get to Mexico from there. But anyhow, you need a passport or an enhanced license. Me and Stacy just have enhanced licenses.
Ah.
It has like extra security features.
You'll have to smuggle us in then.
Yeah, we'll put you in the trunk. But and then there's like a ton of stuff to do in Canada.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was just kind of upfront. It wasn't unexpected that those tickets were sold out, especially that since we didn't get there, right away. But we didn't want to really rush, and that's just what happened, and it is what it is,
Yeah, I don't ever do that kind of stuff. I just take my time, because that stuff just stresses me out. I'm not into that crap anymore. I'm too old for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been except for him.
He's
really the only one that I would have been. That I was interested in doing that for. I did get a sketch from a local guy. He's up in Canada himself. He lives in I don't know where, maybe Hamilton. He's pretty close to the border. He's come down to Buffalo a couple times. His name's Mike Ruth. He does some variant covers he's done a couple for Valiant, but he does a lot for Aftershock.
Yeah.
And he did a Swamp Thing sketch for me in my um, D DC sketchbook. So that was that was fun. Yeah.
Just a head sketch or a full body?
It was like a three quarter, like from the waist up. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm looking for this. You know, I told him he loves drawing Swamp Thing, first of all. It's like if he's having like a rough day or whatever, he'll just reset his brain by drawing Swamp Thing. And but so I really wanted one from him because he does such a great job on that character. So I said, yeah, you know, this is what I'm looking for. I said, how much do you want? He's like, oh, I don't know. He's like, well, how about 60? And this is Canadian also. Yeah. Okay? Like 60? I go, no, Mike. I'm actually going to give you more than that. He's like, all right, well, then I'll do a really nice job. I'm like, okay.
Wait, no.
He was just going to do a crappy job.
Can I ask another dumb question just because I have never been to Canada?
Yeah.
Do you have to do some kind of monetary exchange or?
You can, and we did, because, like, you know, we brought, we brought a few hundred in, and we stopped at just before the bridge across the Niagara River.
Yeah.
is like a what do you call it, Chris? Like where you can get your liquor.
Currency exchange.
Yeah, but
duty free
shop.
Duty free store. Woo!
Yeah.
Seinfeld, so, I know that.
Yeah, so we went there and we brought like 300 and they gave us like I can't even remember like 400 and whatever, like whatever the exchange rate is. But the thing is, because our money is valued more, you could go with just American money. They will happily take it. It's just they may or may not, depending on the vendor or who it is, they may or may not give you like a discount for how much you're giving. So if like they're charging $80, depending on who it is, might just take 80 American dollars, even if their price was 80 Canadian. So you're kind of paying extra if you don't, or you could be paying extra.
Even if you're just going over there to, even if you're just going over there to shop,
it's to your advantage to switch.
Mm-hmm. You usually the what do you call it? The currency exchange or at duty free or something like that. They the exchange rate is better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then if you're just like straight up at the store, they'll give you like whatever the lowest possible exchange rate is. So it's
better. I mean, they're getting really good. Like we went not too long ago, actually. A few weeks ago with the kids just to walk around like the actual Niagara Falls parks. And we walked across there's a pedestrian part of the bridge too. So we walked across the bridge and they have a Hershey store on the other side. So we stopped and got ice cream and stuff like that. And because it was impromptu, we just walked across. All I had was American. So I would pay an American. They actually did a conversion right there. Like Chris said, it might not be the best conversion, but they actually, which is something that they never did before, is they gave me American back, which a lot of times in the past, say, yeah, you can pay an American and we'll convert it for you, but we're going to give you the change back in Canadian. So it was nice. So we actually got American back.
Well, can I go across there?
You are.
Can I go across there?
The closer you are
there
to the border.
Yes, the more likely.
The better it is. Yeah. Like, the deeper you go into the wilds of Canada, you know.
They're just going to want, yeah.
No, but mm-hmm. Can you actually find, the deeper you go, can you find a place like a bank or somewhere where you can exchange? Or
probably. I mean, I've only gone up to Toronto, which is like an hour and a half from us.
What do you do about credit card stuff?
Credit card's fine. If they take credit card, you're probably pretty, I mean, they do. It depends. I think you get charged it's a very small amount of money, but you get like a currency exchange charge. It's very small, but then you do get that difference in whatever the daily rate is.
Yeah, your bank just does it automatically.
Yeah, automatically. Yeah.
Can I go across there for healthcare? Can I?
I don't know.
No, you
have
can't.
A surgery.
What if he just gets injured in Canada?
Yeah, what if?
Well, what do you mean? Because, like, their health care is covered.
Right.
I know.
But what if Mike falls...
So you'd have to pay for it.
It falls
the very...
down the stairs in Canada. Would he be covered?
It might depend on his insurance and American insurance.
Okay.
I'd probably be fucked. That'd be considered out of network and out of country, and we're not paying shit.
I figured Mike meant, can I go over there and get free health care? And the answer to that is no.
How long does it take to become a citizen?
I don't know. But you know what? If something happens in another couple of years, or what is it, next year, I might start thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think you have to have, like, some kind of sponsorship or reason. Like, you have to, like, have a company over there that's willing to hire you or something like that. Like,
well, what about asylum? Can I claim asylum?
Not yet, but...
We're getting there.
At that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you're a white dude, so
yeah, I know.
Believe that you, that
I'm
you
not checking it off any of the boxes here for asylum. No. White, straight. I don't even know what else.
Male.
Oh, there. Yeah, of course. Male. Yeah. Yeah. That's
Everything's being designed in our favor.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it was so, I mean, honestly, I was only a little bit, I was bummed out more than anything about not being able to actually, like, talk, just say hi one-on-one with, I mean, the line, even with the half-hour, like, increments of time, it was still, the lines were insane for him. And they don't have room in that type of setting for those types of lines, especially on the comic book end, which is why I think they did the, they implemented that ticket system, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only reason I even thought about going was because of him, so I feel better anyway.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't, but...
he's such a wonderful person, though, isn't he? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's just, it's not like he's being a dick, it's just... It's out of necessity, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and like the panel, he's just going, he's like, yeah, people say like, oh, thank you so much for this or thank you for, but he's like, until like now I've decided to retire and I'm hearing from all of these people and they're coming up to me and he's like, they're asking for me to sign my name. You sign your name so many times, you know, throughout your life for all sorts of things. It means like you don't think anything of it. And
right.
And he's like, but it's like you here, you're putting a value on the fact that I'm signing my name. And like, you could tell it literally, as famous as he was and as influential as it literally, you could tell he honestly was blowing his mind that like, it was just so nice to see how appreciative he was to, that all of these people are there to kind of say thank you. You know, it was really heartfelt.
Well, he's a heartfelt dude, though.
Oh, so much so.
Yeah.
It is funny, though. Like, you know, like I signed my name last night to pay for dinner, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously no one gives a shit, but it's just fun. You can think about like making that transition, though, from like, you know, signing your name on papers or at the bank. And then people actually want you to sign, like, write your name on your book, because right now if I went around and like wrote my name on people's books, they would get pissed off.
Exactly. And so it was cool to hear him say that. And, you know, he said some of the stuff that I think that, Mike, you heard it, because you went to the Wolfman and Perez panel, hadn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he had said some stuff. He's like, you know, he's like, it was time for, you know, time for me to retire. And, you know, and obviously people know about his vision issues and stuff. And he's like, people retire all the time. Not so much in, he's like, I didn't really realize it until I announced that I was retiring, but it doesn't really, like, a lot of people don't really announce a retirement as an artist. You just keep kind of working forever or you get kind of pushed out of the business involuntarily. He's like, I was very fortunate that people were interested in my work.
Yeah, he left on his own terms, which is a very rare thing to do in that field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was,
you just stop giving work.
Yep. And he's like, I was so fortunate. He's like, right, you know, up to when I was retiring and even now, because, you know, he said if something really interests him and he has the, and their people are patient enough to wait for the work. He's like, maybe I would do it. He's like, I'm still, you know, getting offers and stuff. And, you know, I of course, I keep turning him down saying, no.
I wonder if he'll resort, though, to cover work. Like, I noticed some of his covers have been popping up on Marvel, like for 1 in 1,000 and stuff like that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm wondering the same. And I think he's got something in that Marvel 1000, and I'm not sure if it's old work or it's something that he had enough lead in time that he worked on or what, but
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was fantastic. Honestly, it was fantastic to be able to be in a panel and hear him talk. And it was even better, you know, we had, you know, Jim Starlin and Joe Rubenstein, you know, talking too, and they were both very entertaining. I don't know if Jim Starlin has a business around here or lives around here, but I know he's always doing things with that Sleeping Giant location, Chris. I don't know if he has something to do with them or what, but I know he's always seems to be around that area.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, because I know he's done some signings at that particular location, which I've never even been to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did you have with you? Did you take something in case he could sign something? Or
Yes. I brought my
brought his wiener.
I brought yes.
Can you please sign that?
Yeah. I'll never wash it again.
I got my back signed so I could get a tattoo on my like a tramp stamp. So when I bend over, you'd see George Perez.
Oh, fantastic!
There you
see?
Go.
Yep. I brought the. It was a. It's a.
Be like, I thought your name was Mike.
It was a silver slipcase edition of Crisis on Infinite Earths. Probably came out quite a few years ago. It's a hardcover, and then I just brought the first trade of the Titans. So it's going to have him sign both of those.
Very cool.
Yeah. But he didn't.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, I've never been into signatures, but there's a couple things that I would like signed.
Mm-hmm. See, especially now
that I'm digging around like dollar bins in the 90s and I'm finding like these gems with these real obscure things that I didn't even know, like Sam Keith drew or something like that. You know, it's just like a backup feature. It's things like that I would cherish more than, oh, here, sign my Max, because I don't know. It's like I'm experiencing like this weird early work from them, and it means more to me than what made them popular.
Yeah. I think for me in this case, it was more like you kind of wanted to like go up and say, you know, just like everyone else, a million other people have already told him like how much his work actually like meant to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he was the first one that I realized, oh my God, like who's drawing this particular thing?
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, and then.
For me, it was a Paro and, John Byrne. That's when I first started to notice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great examples. But yeah. So, but
before I didn't care. I really didn't.
No. You know,
I didn't even look at the credits thing. I wanted to read the characters. I didn't care.
Exactly. It didn't occur. I mean, well, no. You know, when you're young, you don't really. You just take for granted that it's.
But
there.
I did know what I didn't like. And it's amazing how things change with time, because even then when I was real young, I didn't care for Kirby's art.
Well, he was a hack.
I preferred like Neil Adams and stuff like that. You know what I mean? More realistic.
Yeah.
And then as I hit college, I just became this Jack Kirby freak, like where I saw things in it that I never saw before. So, yeah, times changed. The same happened with Sam Keith. When he first came out, I didn't like his art at all. I hated the Wolverine curls that went about 3 feet high in the air. And he made him so damn hairy. I'm like, God damn, he looks like a beast. but now I like love Sam Keith, so it's
yeah,
like
I
it's
like
strange.
It. I like it too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like weird.
He did. I mean, it's obviously a very particular style. You just have to, you know, I mean, whether you appreciate it or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cool.
Well, I just picked up some weird books, and Arthur is his name, Sydum. He's a Marvel zombie guy.
Oh yeah, the zombie guy.
That's what made him popular. Mm-hmm. But I picked up some real obscure stuff with some of his earlier work, and I'm like kind of blown away. I'm like, wow, his art was so much better then.
Really?
I'm like, I don't know. It's very like Sam Keith-ish, so it's real. It looks really awesome to me. It looks, It looks so. I can't even describe it. Like like Ploog. Have you ever like seen his art?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's inspiring. I'm like, wow, this is amazing.
That's cool. It was fun. You know what? Talking about it in retrospect is making me realize how much more fun I had than I felt at the time. Because
well,
at the
you
time,
you wouldn't imagine if you could go to a con though and just hang out. Like, just it is so much fun. Like with just friends.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is a different experience than if you go by yourself. I've gone to cons by myself, and it's more like. It's more like a bin thing, like you're experiencing stuff. But when you're with friends, it's like it just adds like seven dimensions to everything that you do. Like yeah, even if you're at a con. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm his friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Walked around.
Yeah.
He bought stuff. What Mike means, though.
Chris has even been to my house.
Yeah.
He slept in your bed.
He did sleep in my bed.
Slept in one of his beds, yeah.
He couldn't get into the other room because it was...
No, I didn't even see. That's the only part of the house I didn't see. I started to walk towards that door, and there was, like, this force that just, like, pushed me back down the hall.
You can actually walk in that room now. I spent so much time in there. I spent 12 hours on a Sunday in there, and it was painful, but I can walk in.
Oh, are you talking about the trade paperback room?
Yeah, the trade room, yeah.
Well, not paperback, but yeah, the trade room. Yeah, that was just a bunch of... was the trade tower room. There were just towers of trades on the floor.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know what? And it was a good time. I think that I wanted to have more time to like just look around and shop, but I'll be honest with you, there wasn't a lot to like choose from in terms of like I'll spend a lot of time if there's like cheap bins to kind of look through. There weren't a lot like that. And I think part of the other thing is I'm nearing completion in so many different titles that I really
harder
don't
to find what you want. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So I almost have to kind of like do a deep dive and see, okay, what else would I really be interested in completing like some runs? So I actually have like more options of things
to
buy.
For me, it's easy because I don't keep my focus. So I just buy whatever strikes my fancy, and I know I don't have. It's different for me. I have too many that I want to explore. But I almost completed my Hulk magazine run. I'm pretty happy.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that starts off one black. Issue of this.
That starts off black and white as Rampaging Hulk, and then it turns in issue 10. Into a color version of it.
Very cool.
Yeah, there's some gems in those Marvel magazines. So, Chris, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I can. Most of the stuff I read was on the shorter side. Let's see. Which one should I start with? I'll start with... So I read a human target story.
Oh, nice.
It's from an issue of Action Comics. Let me figure out which one. So this was in the trade, the DC Universe by Len Wein.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
I love Christopher Chance, but I seem to grow my love for him because of how much exposure he's gotten on TV. It's amazing. He's got a large library of material. He's got 2 seasons of that Fox show. He had the Rick Springfield Human Target pilot, and then he was been in Arrow. So, I mean, he has a lot of exposure. Like more. I think he has more exposure in TV than he does comics. If you don't include probably. That long run Vertigo series that he had.
I think it was the Vertigo series that kind of put it on the radar of at least like the TV producers.
Yeah.
As like an interesting concept, but this was in Action Comics issue 420. And it's called The King of the Jungle Contract. It has art by Dick Giordano. Let me just find it here because I was checking out the table of contents. Yeah. So this starts off with a big game hunter, a guy on a hunting expedition. His name is King. It's probably his last name. And he's facing down a leopard. And he's not able to shoot. Someone had tampered with his gun. So he has to like face down the leopard without his gun. Comes up with the idea of grabbing the photographer that's on the expedition. He grabs his camera and he uses the flash to blind the leopard, and then hits it over the back of the head with the other end of his rifle. So once it's knocked out, he looks and he notices that there's marks on the leopard's neck from a collar. So it wasn't just a fluke that he was in the situation that he was in. So then he goes, so it switches to the next scene, and he goes to a restaurant where Christopher Chance is dining. And King's his last name. He introduces himself as Gunther King, so that's his full name. So he just kind of butts in on Chance's meal, starts eating Chance's just delivered food, and he explains that he's the best hunter and guide in Africa, and somebody resents that fact, a guy named Ernest Holloway. And that Holloway resents him for kind of King for kind of becoming the new big kahuna in the jungle. And so he wants to contract Chance. He says, you know, yeah, I'm a great hunter, but I'm an amateur when it comes to being hunted. And so he wants Chance to impersonate him on a upcoming photo safari, because he's convinced that Holloway is going to set a trap for him again to try to take him out. So Chance takes the contract for $10,000 in advance, plus the price of the meal that he ruined. and then we see Chance transforming, putting on his disguise and stuff, and talking and narrating that he doesn't really like King, but he's taking the job. So he heads out on the photo photo safari in King's place, with his crew and everything. When he does end up getting snared in a trap that, you know, grabs him by the foot, and one of those traps that where you end up hanging upside down from a tree by your foot. And then, and just after that, a Cape Buffalo appears. He's like, oh my, he's like, thinks that's the world's most dangerous animal. Good thing I didn't disturb him or he'd tear me to pieces. Well, just then a rifle shot, clips the buffalo, purposefully. And you know, the buffalo doesn't see where the shot came from. He just sees this guy hanging from the tree. So he gets, it gets ready to charge. And Chance knows that the only vulnerable spot on the buffalo is between the eyes, but he dropped his rifle when he got caught in the trap. But he does have a 357 Magnum on him, and so he puts a bunch of bullets in the buffalo before it reaches him, and he's able to get out of the trap. But just as soon as he does that, he's looking at the buffalo, and then another rifle shot comes from the riverbank. So he assumes that it's Holloway taking the shot at him, and so he rushes out there, and just as he gets close to Holloway, somebody shoots Holloway, and it turns out to be King. He says, looks like I did your dad for you. Holloway is dead. I had to shoot him before he got you. So he goes up to, so Chance goes in to pick up Holloway's rifle, and he notices that Holloway has mud in the, on the palm of his hand where he'd supposedly been holding the rifle. So this, you know, so he questions King. He says it wasn't self-defense, it was murder. So this was King's oversight. You know, he had planted the rifle there, actually. And so he pulls his rifle on Chance. So Chance, before he can pull, he can fire the rifle, they have a bit of a scuffle and fight in the riverbank that they're in. And King actually gets the upper hand, and is going to fire on Chance. He says, for God's sake, don't shoot. But the rifle barrel was clogged with mud, because you'd see it in previous panels when they were fighting. You could see it sticking out of the earth. And so when he goes to fire it, the rifle explodes in his hands. Basically, King, as they're fighting, explains, or it's kind of a conversation between the two, as Chance is, it's all dawned on Chance what this whole situation was, that it was kind of a setup so that King wanted to arrange it so that he could kill Holloway and have Chance be there as a witness, that, you know, that it was in self-defense, but he, you know, he screwed up the evidence that he planted. So, yeah, it was pretty neat. I mean, the twist was kind of fun. And you know, just the whole concept of the human target in the first place is a fun concept. It was a little disappointing that ultimately, Chance is saved by the fact that the rifle is clogged. He's not really saved by his own ingenuity or anything like that, but
sheer luck.
Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, it was a fun story.
It's cool though when they throw in that situation, because it's very rarely used. You know, sheer luck, but you know, I could have died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was a fun story, fun little short story.
Cool. Rob, did you get your Marvel or DC Universe thing?
No, but I will very soon. When is Father's Day? Next Sunday?
I just wanted to tell you, in case you didn't know, but Human Target is on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the TV show.
So what's going to happen with this service, Mike? Seems like I'm going to get it, and it seems like it's...
I don't think it's going away. I don't think so. I think it's too early to speculate.
You heard about Swamp Thing, but I know that they had that issue apparently with tax breaks or something like that.
It appears that there's a lot of AT&T stuff going on, but I don't think it's as, in talking to some people that know, I don't think it's as influential as it's made out to be.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a Swamp Thing had a lot of problems, not just the tax thing, but there was a lot of creative problems going on. They cut the season short. I think it's a bad move though, in terms of somebody making the decision after one streaming episode.
Yeah, it did.
Because you, if I was to make a decision, like, I don't have to announce that I'm going to re-op on it until I'm, like, way down the road. Like, all the episodes have been released. Then make a decision. Am I getting the streaming numbers, or is the demand there?
Right.
And then make a decision. I think it's too early to make a decision on it. Well, having said that, okay, and have watched Titans, Swamp Thing, and Doom Patrol on their pilot episodes, Swamp Thing was the weakest.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, but just like you were saying, even if forces behind the scenes make it so, for whatever reason, financially, critically, just don't want to do it, whatever the reason is that they want, they're going to decide not to renew. I agree with you. There's no, just because they know that doesn't mean they needed to announce it after. It's just, it looks
The tax break. Yeah, you made a mistake, right? You're gonna, it's gonna bite you in the ass. Yeah, you screwed up thinking you were gonna get this tax break you didn't get. So, but that doesn't mean you've waited long enough to see what happens out of it. Like, it could be successful enough that you make enough and you're like, wow, people are really interested in this. I'll just film this somewhere else.
Yeah.
Where I can probably get a better tax break and move it to a different location. But I don't know. I'm not in that business, man. There's probably a lot more complexities that we don't even see. Like, we're just naive to, and we can speculate all we want, but there's a lot of, when it comes to a TV thing, there's a lot of driving forces, like personalities and actors and producers. I mean, in this case, there's no advertisers because it's a streaming service, but there's so much stuff that goes on that people don't consider, and they throw a tantrum if they, like, they cancel Deadly Class, and I was like, oh man, that Deadly Class was to me an art form on TV. Like, it was amazing, and for me, somebody who grew up in the 80s, it was a musical. It was just amazing, the music they played during these fight scenes and emotional scenes, and I mean, a lot of Smiths and stuff like that, and they just, like, timed it perfectly. But I don't get upset anymore because there's so much of it. I think cancellations meant a lot more to me when there wasn't so much out there. Now there's so much out there, I can't even consume it all.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's ridiculous. So I'm like, oh, you cancel this? Well, there'll be something else I can watch, you know?
Yeah.
That I wasn't, like, going to watch before.
It's like it narrows down your choices for you.
Exactly.
It's like a relief.
It's like, oh, okay, good. And I think got canceled.
Yeah, I don't have to make a decision. Too. Yeah. Because, like, this season, like, I've been enjoying the heck out of Supergirl. Like, it has went from, like, a B to a B-minus show to, like, an A show. And John Cryer, god dang, you never think, but he makes a damn good Lex Luthor. I know he played Lenny Luthor in Superman 4, but he makes a damn good Lex Luthor.
That's
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you really can't ever like flip out. Oh, this actor's announced. Actors are actors. They're paid to act, so let them act before you make a judgment call.
Oh, I'm just tired of people just flying off the handle with everything because they don't get exactly what they expected to get.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, if it's the end of a series, if it's a casting for a, just give it a rest already. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know where people started to decide that they need to have that type of attitude.
I don't think it's new. I don't think the attitude's new. It's just you just hear more of it because of the internet.
Well, they can band. You're right. Band together now.
Chris has nailed it because if you go read letters pages from like old comics, you're like, holy cow, it's always been there. It's so much more work to do it back then than it is now.
Yeah.
Like back then, they had to write the letter. They had to freaking put it in an envelope, stamp it, and hope that it got published. Like it could be end up in a trash can. Yeah. I do think it's awesome that some of the editors let some of those letters go in, you know, without. Because there's a lot of negativity in those letters.
Yeah.
And usually they were, you know, more articulately expressed, at least, because they had to take the time to actually compose a letter, and they're not going to publish something that's just like a sprawl and a whole bunch of, you know, it's just all capitals and there's no punctuation marks. I mean, they're not going to, or if they do, they're going to clean it up first. But now it's just like anybody with, you know, everybody walks around with the phone in their pocket in the first place, so they don't even have to like take the time to think it through
or proofread it or anything. It's just
It's just like you just grab the phone out of your pocket and it's like, I'm a moron, and you know, then they're done, you know. So it's just like there's no time for a second. I mean, that's why you have a lot of times people like regretting what they tweet and stuff and having to go back and apologize to, because it's like, if you have to take the time to write the letter, well, maybe you're writing the letter in the evening and the post office isn't open, so you got to wait till the morning to mail the letter in the first place. And by that time, you're probably like, maybe I should just keep this to myself.
Yeah.
Because it's true. I mean, I think at least I've been guilty of reacting to something and not realizing what I wrote and thinking about it. Now when I reply, I definitely don't hit just enter unless it's just me saying something stupid like, hey, this comic rocked my world. But like if it's a response to somebody negative or something, I just don't fly off of the, like I've done that before, and it's like, it ain't worth it. Half the time it isn't even worth it. And I just sit on, think about it a little more. And, you know, like once I realize what that person's really saying, I don't know. I don't have to flip out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, most of us have, it's just whether or not you learn from it, you know, and some people just never learn.
Yeah.
But,
Well, I got something to cover if I can go, Rob.
Please.
I picked up a few comics from Aaron Myers, and one of them was X-Men 36. And this one was like just a joy to read. I don't know if it just, I had just come off watching Dark Phoenix, and I was in this X-Men mode. Like I was
I have this one.
Yeah, I want. Of course, you have it. What kind of question is that?
But you got some really, like, you got some key X-Men issues from him.
Yeah, it actually is pretty impressive considering I'm never an X-Men guy, that I have what I've built in such a short amount of time. But this issue here, I just felt like reading some classic X-Men, like before Claremont. I don't know why. I just wanted to read it. And this one was a true gem. It's ridiculous, and I loved it, every minute of it. But it opens up with, like, somebody's raiding the mansion, and they're all downstairs because there's this organization called the Triple something or another that stole Professor Xavier, and they're out to rescue him. They need to rescue him. So all the members are down there coming up with a plan on how to rescue him. And then there's these just goons that decided to raid the mansion and steal stuff. And the Beast is up there fighting them. And it's a pretty good fight. You know, the Beast eventually conquers them. But they clock him over the head a couple of times. And I just love the old Beast because he's got these big-ass feet. And they don't have any hair at the time. And he's just, like, smacking people in the face with his feet. And I'm like, God, that's got to be disgusting. Because I'm not a feet person. And it's like, these feet are everywhere, man. And they have to stink a little bit. And he's just kicking their butts. And he brings them downstairs where the other X-Men is. It's so funny because Bobby is like, man, there's a lot of noise up there. Maybe I should go check it out. And Cyclops is just like, nah, let him take care of it. He'd call us if he needs help. So they're just sitting there planning on what to do next. And they use Cerebro to brainwash these guys and turn themselves into the police because they didn't want them to know that, you know, they were all dressed in the mansion and what they were. I guess they're trying to hide that they're mutants in the mansion at this time frame. And they're like, well, what could we do, you know, to get to Professor X? He's in Europe. Well, we don't have enough gas money to fuel the jet. So we can't fuel Blackbird because we don't have any gas money. So Warren's like, God, you know, my parents have a lot of money, so I'm going to go ask them for money. And he goes to ask them for money, and they're gone. They're on, like, this international trip. And he can't ask him for money, so he decides to go with Cyclops and Jean to, like, the welfare office and ask for welfare. I'm like, what is going on here? This is crazy shit. And meanwhile, they're driving around looking for work in a Rolls Royce from the mansion. So it's like these people are like, oh, these guys must be well-to-do. They don't have enough money as kids, nor do they know how to generate the money to go save Professor Xavier. So as they're driving by, they're like, wow, there's construction work. We could do construction for a day. And so they demonstrate to the construction people, hey, you know, here's Angel and Cyclops, and they're like, putting in rivets into the construction building, and Jean Grey's like lifting all these girders so they can rivet it together. And they said, wow, this is so productive. We could hire you, but you have to fill out this paperwork and join a union. That'll take a week. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. We got to go save Professor Xavier.
Exactly.
And then it even gets even more cool. Like, I just love this. Is Bobby and Hank decide, well, you know what? We could go perform in front of a bunch of people and do this awesome stuff with juggling with ice and all this ice bridges, and then ask them to donate afterwards. Meanwhile, they ran out of gas in the Rolls Royce, so they don't have anywhere to go. So some guy just randomly drives up and says, "You guys need a ride?" And they're like, "Yeah, we need a ride." And they don't have their costumes on at the time, Cyclops and Jean. And they get in the car, and this guy's like an angry teenager, man. This guy's like, I don't know, he might be in his 20s or 18, and he's like, oh, man, he's like hating on life. And he's like this raging Twitter fan. He's like hating everything. And they're like, what's this guy's problem? And he drops them off, and they're very thankful. And, well, it turns out that this guy has a rich, rich father, and he is going to destroy the library that his father's putting together. And his name is Meccano. So he had stole all this like technology to make this like armored suit to give him strength and all this power, and he's going to destroy his father's library because he's really angry at his father. And then when he does it, he sees Bobby and Beast performing in front of everybody trying to earn money, and he goes, yeah, those guys are with me, and I just destroyed this wing of the library. And so now they can't make their money to, you know, from performing, because now the police are after the X-Men because this guy says, hey, they were with me, and accused them of that. And then he's destroying the library, and the X-Men come together. They save the library, parts of it anyway, and they stop this kid. And then, like the end of Scooby-Doo, they unmask him, and the father's there, and he goes, son, what's wrong with you? Why were you trying to destroy? And he's like, dad, you never pay attention to me. You never listen to me and all this. But he's going to serve criminal charges now because he stole stuff from the university to make a suit. The father says, I'm not filing charges, you know, this is my library, it isn't up yet. Let him go. And he rewards the X-Men with enough cash to get a flight to Europe and save Professor X. I love this book. It was,
I can tell that you loved it.
It was such a pleasure to read this thing.
Sir, why do you need welfare? I need money to fuel my jet, my private jet.
Yeah. And then the welfare office look out the window and they're driving away on the Rolls Royce and say, man, yeah, they were trying to con us. It must be some prank. It must be a prank. This is amazing.
If only we could figure out a way to make money as we drive around in our Rolls Royce.
It's so cool just how randomly they ran out of gas, and then this one guy that turns out to be Meccano picks him up in his other identity and drives him to where they're going.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, God. This was... Who did this? This is amazing. This was...
Thomas. Roy Thomas?
Yeah, Roy Thomas and Ross Andrew.
Yeah. That's awesome. You had a good time.
I had a blast. At Dark Phoenix too, so I was like, it put me into this mode where, like, when I'm coming home, what am I gonna read for the cast? And this cover just, it struck me as awesome. I was like, this is cool, man. These X-Men are fighting this robotic guy. I gotta see what it's about. And it just turned out to be gold. I mean, it was like page after page, like gold. I was like, this is a 5 out of 5. I was like, God, it just, when something hits your mood, like just like 100%, this, it's amazing. Like, you just, it was so ridiculously fun that I loved it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it. You do have to, it is nice to get in that mindset, in that, to get yourself in that mood for, you know, those early 60s Marvels, yeah, and especially the X-Men ones too, because they are, because of that team dynamic, and they're all teenagers and stuff, and they're written by somebody who is definitely not a teenager at the time. Mm-hmm. It is very fun to read. It's very, it can be funny, like, you know, you were laughing as you were telling us the different stuff. It's very, yeah, it's like a light read, right?
I just like to, like, I never realized how early on, I always thought, you know, Hank was a beast. I never realized how smart he was. Like, he's still really smart because he's very elegant at what words he uses. Like, he uses big phrases compared to what everybody else uses. Like, vocabulary is amazing. And it's,
yeah, I mean,
guy,
the personality was there.
Feet. Yeah, it's this guy with his huge, stinky feet. And he's just, like, slapping people in the face. You know, it's like, wow. But I liked it, too, because they were giving him a run for his money, these criminals. You know, they were grabbing chairs and hitting him over the back. All kinds of stuff. It was great. And it was so cool because two of the X-Men wanted to go see what all the ruckus was, and they're like, nah, it will be all right. Fight upstairs. They didn't know, have a clue what was going on upstairs. And then they did the Zatanna thing, and they mind wiped these dudes. And they go to the police station, and they're like, "Yeah, we robbed this about 10 years ago. We stole all this." The guy's like writing it all down, and he says, "Can we get somebody else here to help me write all this stuff down?" It's like I can't keep up.
You are cracking me up right now.
It was fantastic.
Just having so much fun with this. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh my god, that's awesome. Well, if it's my turn, I've got some unusual things to talk about. I didn't have a lot because yesterday was so busy. Didn't have a lot of time to read a lot of old comics, but I am going to just talk about, an old novel. Now, Mike, a novel, not a graphic novel, a novel. This is a book that does not have any pictures at all.
Okay. Hey, I'm still reading one. I'm still on the Stephen King one.
It's about 130 pages long.
I get about through 10 pages every month. Hey, give me some credit. I'm almost halfway through.
That sounds accurate because I think you did start it about 10 or 11 months ago.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's coming on a year. I'm about halfway through. I'm making some progress.
You're getting there. So, did either one of you end up, I know Mike, you had started to do, started to watch The Haunting of Hill House. Did you ever, finish it?
No, I'm four episodes in, but I am, it is on my queue to, finish it.
Yeah, I watched it.
Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So Stacy had gotten a deal or something on Amazon for like the digital novel, and so she had read it and she kept asking me to read it, and I was always busy doing other things, and she's like, just read it, it's very short, just read it. So I checked and it's like, I don't remember, it was just over 200 pages. So I went ahead and I just finished that this weekend. So it's The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, and it was written in 1959. So it was very, very – have you ever read that book, Chris?
Yes, I have actually. I read it before I read it. I had read it years ago.
Okay. Yeah, so I hadn't until after watching the whole series. It's incredibly different. Basically, between the two things, I mean, obviously there's the Hill House itself, but I mean, they except for the caretaker and his wife, they pretty much just take names from the book. From the book, and just make new characters out of them, kind of in the TV show. So in the book, the premise is that this Dr. Montague is going to do some research. He does paranormal research, and he wants to investigate Hill House. Apparently, a lot of other people have gone there, and nobody's able to stay. And some people that have stayed too long have died. And very mysterious. And I never really gathered how he selected these three other people to come and help him. I don't recall if he put out some sort of notice and people replied back, or if he somehow knew of them and contacted them. But anyhow, the main character is Eleanor Vance. And in the TV show, these are all siblings, and then there's a mother and father. In the book, it's just three strangers with this particular doctor. But all three of the people coming to assist the doctor the names were all used in the TV show as siblings. So Eleanor Vance is the main character, and she's a very awkward, socially awkward, very shy, reserved woman in her early 30s who had recently lived with her mother and taken care of her when she was sick until she passed away. She has a lot of guilt associated associated with the fact that her mom passed away. She feels like maybe there was something that she could have done to prevent her mom from dying. As a matter of fact, when her mom did die, although it was inevitable that she was going to pass away regardless, she had been banging her wall for more medicine, and Eleanor had been asleep at the time and hadn't woke up to hear the banging. And when she woke up, she found out her mom was dead. So that filled her with some guilt as well. The other two that are helping this Dr. Montague is Theodora and Luke. And Luke is going to inherit the house someday from his aunt. And he's there both to help, but also they, when the aunt allowed the doctor to come and do an investigation, she wanted somebody from the family to be there. So he's going to be there. Theodora, again, it doesn't explain exactly how they selected her. However, without coming right out and saying it, they allude to she has that she lives with another woman as a roommate, but without saying so, they kind of allude that she is a lesbian, and that's how her character is portrayed in the TV show as well. So they get there, and they have a very uneventful first night, and then after that, things start to get very, very strange. They find writing on the walls that keeps saying, like, Eleanor, come home. Eleanor, please come home. As Eleanor is there for a longer period of time, she feels like she hears the word mother. Nobody else. The other people are hearing pounding at night on their doors, really shaking the entire door frame and feeling like it's going to just come apart. But they're not. Their names aren't. You know, being written out, and they don't seem to hear voices. By the time towards the end of the book, Eleanor is kind of, you could tell that she's having like a mental break. There were times alluded to earlier where she kind of loses where she is, and it feels like by the time she kind of comes to, and she's not knocked out, she's just like not paying attention, and when she finally comes to, she doesn't realize time has passed, and like people are trying to get her attention, and she was acting bizarre, or she wasn't responding to what people were saying, until finally one of the last nights she almost is like sleepwalking, but she feels like she's awake, but she's climbing this very, very long spiral like iron staircase in the library, which she was avoiding before. She had this really bad feeling about the library where she physically felt like she couldn't get into the room. But as she's doing this like sleepwalk thing, she goes in and she climbs all the way up. Now this iron staircase is very rusty and is actually starting to come apart. So she becomes more conscious and self-aware as she's at the top. The rest of the party ends up, because there was a lot of banging going on that night as well, they rush out, realize that she's not in her bedroom. They start searching. She calls out, and they come to the library. And Luke very carefully climbs up there and rescues her. But then they decide at the next morning that it's no longer safe for her to be there because she just seems to be being influenced by the house more so than anyone else in the group, and they need to get her to leave. She keeps protesting. She doesn't want to leave. She says she likes it there. The house needs her, et cetera, et cetera. And everything that she says convinces the doctor and the others that it's very important that she leaves and forgets about the house. Finally, they get her in her car, and I am going to do full spoiler. So if for some reason somebody wants to read the book but hasn't, just skip ahead a little bit, because at the very end of the book, they finally get her into her car. she starts to get ready to drive off, and she kind of feels like the house again, like calling to her, and she realizes how it is she can stay with the house without everyone else knowing. And she hits the gas as hard as she can and drives straight into a huge tree. And so she ends up not killing herself. And then it just briefly says that after that, the experiment was canceled and they each went their own way. And that, of course, Luke wanted nothing to do with the house ever again. And the doctor tried to write a book and what Theodora did and stuff. And then, like, the last lines of the book are, again, you know, like, kind of like the show was, I think, how some of the opening lines were straight from the book, like, just talking about the architecture of the actual house and just saying, like, you know, it has these walls, it has these halls, and whoever walks there walks alone. And then that's the end of the book. I personally absolutely loved the TV show. I didn't like the book quite as much, but I still liked the book quite a bit. So if you're looking for a different take on the TV show, which is nothing like the book at all, I would definitely recommend it. It's a very quick read.
It's interesting because I'm coming into cases where I like the TV shows better than the book. And that's usually you could say it the opposite. Oh, it's not the novel or it's not the original thing. But, like, I haven't read Umbrella Academy, but I think I'm going to like the TV show more than I do the comic book. and it happened with the end of the fucking world, too. Like,
yeah.
I can't even compare the two. Like,
I haven't read the comic of that yet. I've only seen the show.
Yeah, the show was remarkable. Like, it was.
Yeah, I agree.
It was 1,000 times better than the comic book. Like, I understand where it came from. Like, it wouldn't exist without what he did in the comic book. But it was just leaps and bounds. Like, I think what happened is the creator of the TV show fell in love with the comic work. Like, it spoke to him in a way that he's like, you know what? I can take this and I can blow it up and I can explain all of it. Like, I can add so much more to it. And he did that, and he made it so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's fantastic, the TV show. But yeah, so, you know, Chris, you've done both as well. And you said that you read the other one, the book, quite a while ago. But again, I mean, so different. Did you like them both? Did you not like one? Did you not like the other? What were your thoughts, if you can remember?
I like them both. I don't remember the book as well as the TV show because it's been longer, but I wasn't as high on the TV show as a lot of people, like as you were and Martin, where it was and stuff like that. And maybe that my expectations were really high because you guys were talking about how amazing it was, but I thought it was all right. Like there were episodes that I really liked, and there were aspects of it that I really liked. But then there was other parts that I thought, you know, I thought it was kind of uneven, like the writing and the acting and stuff. It was like sort of uneven. There were
interesting.
There were really good parts and other parts that I thought were so. So, But yeah, it's definitely interesting to experience both. Because like you said, it's very much just like kind of based on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a haunted house, you know, but yeah, it's just such a different scenario for why they're in the haunted house and how they relate to each other in each, you know.
And there are, even though like the characters are taken and made to be very different, there are ways that they do retain some of the aspects of the characters' personalities, even though they're now siblings and stuff. Like you said, with the one daughter's sexual orientation and stuff, like making that an explicit thing rather than just like suggested, which, you know, was because of
1959.
Yeah. And stuff. So it is interesting to see how that process was done.
Yeah, and they didn't. Again, they don't. I mean, they all but come out and say really that Eleanor, like, really. I mean, she's back and forth. This is how it kind of became clear that there's something going on with her, that she's not right. Either she's just not right in general, or something's the house is influencing it. Even her feelings towards Theodora just kept changing back and forth. Like, one minute she's very much attached to her. The next minute, her thought process is like she did something that she took offense to, and saying that she hates her and that, you know, she wishes she would leave. And then, like, later on, she absolutely loves her, and she says that she wants to come and move in with her. So you get the idea that she's in love with her as well. And so that was, I thought, as explicit as they got in terms of a relationship, that, like, it sounded like Eleanor wanted to be with Theodora by the end. But it definitely was interesting. I didn't know quite what to think about it, and it took me a little bit to get into the proper mindset, just like we've talked about with reading older comic books, reading an older actual book in the writing style. Uh-huh. It took a good couple chapters to try to, you know, a good 20 pages probably, to get into that mindset, because it is a lot more formal speaking when the characters are talking to each other. Uh-huh. But it was, I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else did I read? I had talked about a issue of Shazam not that long ago. They recently put out a trade of the first 18 issues of the 70s Shazam by Denny O'Neil and C.C. Beck. It's cool to have that collected. Obviously, you know, like the movie. That's one cool thing about, like, characters, more obscure characters getting movies and stuff. It leads to them, like, reissuing and putting in trade stuff related to that character. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just went ahead and read issue number one.
Which title?
Shazam, the 70s.
Oh, the 70s. Okay, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last one you covered had IBAC in it, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was from later in this run, I think. Yeah. From the
The Buffalo one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was, like,
the cover
from the greatest
of it.
Captain America, Captain America, the greatest Captain Marvel stories.
That's when I first saw the preview for Shazam. I thought because they beefed up Savannah, it was IBAC. It looked like him. That's how he looked like. What's up with that? He had that little piece of hair on the top of his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is issue number one, and it features probably the best known Shazam, Captain Marvel villain, of course. But it starts off with Billy Batson walking down the street, and he says hello to a Mr. Bender, and Bender just responds in kind, and then he stops and says, "Wait a second, Billy Batson? And but you've been missing for 20 years, and you haven't aged. You're still a kid." And so Billy says, "It's a long story. You probably wouldn't believe it." So Mr. Bender walks away, and Billy thinks, I won't blame him for wondering. And then so for a few pages, we get a recount of the Shazam origin as he's, like, thinking back to, you know, the crazy things that have happened to him. So that kind of catches up new readers to who this guy is and stuff. And then Billy hears some gunshots. So he says Shazam,
and transforms. And it's just kind of like a little short, like two-page display of his powers and stuff. The robbers shoot him, and they say either the bullets are bouncing off him or we're using very inferior bullets. So he just helps out with that, and then again, you know, like the people that are there say, "Where you been? What? Tell us what happened to you and stuff." And he says,
"Hey, could you do me a favor? Could you go in the fridge?"
My fridge, or
sorry, my mute is not working. Hey,
Chris, can you go to the fridge?
Chris, can you go to the fridge?
Wait, stop, Chris. You gotta go to the fridge and do it.
I need
some
iced tea.
No, it was Chris. Can you go to the fridge?
Get some iced tea.
And what should I do in the fridge?
Why isn't my mute working?
I want you to take your frost, frost out of the fridge and rub it on your nipples, please.
This is turning into DC noise.
I didn't click it far enough. I was just saying all sorts of things to you just a second ago. You didn't hear it. Chris, I apologize for interrupting you.
No problem.
That was very unprofessional.
Yeah, get on the ball here.
I apologize. Please
this is
continue.
A professional
operation. I needed some ice. My throat's parched.
I see.
All right. Well, I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Send your children on their errands.
I will.
The crowd's asking Captain Marvel where he's been and stuff, and he says, "I don't have time to explain, but even if I did, you probably wouldn't believe me." And so then he recounts, he's thinking back how him and Marvel Jr. and Mary Marvel were being honored by the mayor, and then all of a sudden they were caught in a ray and pulled into the sky along with some of the other people that were in the crowd. And they were drawn out into deep space into a familiar spaceship, and it's Thaddeus Savannah, his daughter Georgina, and his son Savannah Jr. And they're just having a ball because they've finally done it. They snared the Marvels in a globe of suspendium, a compound that he created, and his son says, "Nice going, Pop," and like he smacks him across the back of the head so hard that Savannah, like, his glasses fly off and he gets knocked into the spaceship's controls, and they fly right into the suspendium globe and Captain Marvel's face smashes through the window of their spaceship, and so the suspendium like compound leaks into the spaceship, and so the Savannahs get suspended along with the Marvels, and for two decades they orbit the sun until finally they get close enough to the sun that enough of the suspendium vaporizes that Captain Marvel wakes up, but he can't move. He's been his body hasn't moved in like 20 years. So he says Shazam to change back into Billy, and then he's small enough that he's able to get free, say it again, and fly out into space, and then he rescues Marvel Jr. And Mary, and they shatter the suspendium globe and bring back all the innocent citizens that got zapped with them. And it's kind of neat. There's a panel just showing the dazed citizens and stuff. And there's a, in the issue, there's a key to tell you who the different characters are, which is kind of neat. So it's like Uncle Dudley, of course, Miss Joan Jameson, who apparently is Billy and Captain Marvel's secretary, the owner of the Wiz radio station, Billy's girlfriend, Billy's landlord, Ma Pider, Professor Edgewise, Beautia, Savannah, and Talkie Tawny are all in the picture.
Grown to really like that Beautia Savannah character because she's beautiful. They play with that a lot in the Trials of Shazam, you know, the Jerry Ordway story. And I like her character a lot in there.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like the one that doesn't fit in. So we've kind of caught up on like what happened. So now the Marvels need to track down the Savannahs and figure out where they went. Mary and Junior are searching for them in space, but Captain Marvel thinks that he's probably gone back to his mountain hideout. And those crooks earlier that Marvel took down, it wasn't just like just a random thing to show his powers, but it actually was they were stealing electronic parts and they were hired, and so Marvel figures that it might have had something to do with Savannah, and it's and indeed we see that, you know, he's talking to his two kids and that he's building a death projector. They're like, well, I wish those idiots would get back with the electronic parts, and I want to get started on my new scheme. And they're like, well, can't you just go ahead without it? He's like, well, I suppose so. My death projector won't be 100% efficient. However, it should finish off most of the population. I'll start it up. but just then, Captain Marvel comes crashing in through the ceiling, and knocks out doesn't knock out, but punches one of the kids, and then he just grabs all three of them and flies off into the sky. But he says, "There's one more thing. It's great to be alive, right, Savannahs?" And they all say, "Right." it says the next issue, the return of the nefarious Mr. Mind, and it's got little Mr. Mind there. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was a fun. It was a fun issue to read. It was definitely designed to get back people into, like, you know, new readers, who's Shazam and what's his deal and stuff, and introduce like the main players and stuff. But I thought it was cool that they sort of came up with a reason, you know, for him not being around for a while and all that. So I thought it was fun, entertaining.
Yeah, that's cool.
I had gotten the Showcase Presents from you, the Shazam.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that's funny.
Which is the full collected edition. The full series, because they did release a hardcover, but it's only half of the series.
Yeah, this only goes up to issue 18.
Yeah.
But yeah, the CC Beck art, you know, is really, it's like more of a cartoony style and stuff, and it kind of suits the tone of the story. And it's just, you know, Denny O'Neil, like, it's neat to see him writing like more of like a lighthearted, humorous piece. A lot of like the stuff that he's associated with is pretty dark, you know, that he's known for, yeah. But he definitely had like the versatility. So,
well, I'll get into my next book. this one I wasn't planning on talking about, but it was so good. I made another accomplishment this morning. I finished another Omnibuy.
Oh, so nice.
I like to do a little dance after I finish the Omnibus because they're so big.
Did Barb take a picture or a video of you dancing?
No, nah, she was still asleep when I finished it. But this was the Venom Bus, and I finished it concluded with Venom Carnage Unleashed. And, man, this thing was a gem. Larry Hama wrote it, and artist Andrew Wildman. And I liked his art a lot. And I think I remember him from Silver Sable. But I don't own this in singles, but I am considering getting it because I liked it so much. I can pick and choose which ones I really enjoyed, and this was one of them because it was so freaking ridiculous, and I loved it. Man, it just hit the right mode. It starts off with Carnage is in Ravencroft Insane Asylum, and this guy has a genius idea. He's like, you know, I want to come up with a video game idea, and I want him to sign off on it so I can make a video game of Carnage, and it's just going to be this, he's slaughtering a bunch of people online and stuff. So he gets a developer to do it, he funds it, and it's dumb enough, though, they put a computer terminal inside of the his insane asylum, let Carnage play. And meanwhile, he has a very sexy psychiatrist come and, you know, ask Carnage questions. But she's just a hologram, but you don't know that initially. She's smart enough to not go into the cell because she would end up dead. She'd be dead if she did that. But she's just a hologram projecting herself. She's wearing like really low mini skirt, not professionally dressed at all. But she goes in there to talk to him. This video game designer is making this game, and it's becoming a huge success. Like, people are, like, wanting to play this Carnage video game. Well, while Carnage is in prison, Venom's sort of getting ready to go invade a Ravencroft. And he's traveling by bus to New York, I guess, to get there. And he sits across from a singer. She's like a punk rock singer, and she does all these poems, and she's driving him crazy, but he forms like a bond with her. And as they're driving to the to get to New York, meanwhile Carnage learns how to take his symbiote and move it across the modems. So he essentially moves across and kills the game designer and starts to kill everybody that's playing the games, and that's pretty amazing. I don't think they ever take advantage of this capability later, and so he slaughters the guy who created the game, and then the rich guy that's producing the game, he's like, oh man, negative publicity is good publicity. I can make a lot of money off of this. So he gets like excited. Carnage takes his body out of prison and sort of takes the girl, and there's this ride where they get a prison bus involved. It gets really crazy, and he gets to that guy that owns the video game, and he sort of attacks him and is almost to kill him, and then Venom shows up, because Venom got there also because he could project himself. He learns that he's traveling via the modems, so Venom can do it if he could do it, because Carnage is spawned off of a Venom, so he learns how to do it, and they end up fighting over there. I don't know if a comic book ever exploited this again, or if they kind of like swept it under the carpet, because that's an incredibly powerful ability. That's like Airwave, if you remember him from the Green Lantern and Green Arrow series. Airwave could go over the phone lines, also could the Atom, but if you put a serial killer in that mode, it makes him highly dangerous. But anyway, Venom almost killed Cletus. And this also gives a backstory on Cletus, like his backstory, how he killed his parents and how he threw his grandmother down the stairs and broke her neck. Like, he's a real violent... They weren't selling this character short of being a serial killer and just in a mode to murder anyone and anything. And he eventually gets there and say, but meanwhile, Venom thinks that the punk rock girl is in danger from the guy she's going to visit, but he doesn't realize he's undercover. He thinks he's a heroin user, a drug user, and that she's going to be used by him, and he kills him and finds out later he killed an innocent. And Eddie Brock just, like, brushes it off. Like, he doesn't, like, feel guilty that he kills an innocent. He's like, oops, my bad. but this series was amazing, and the art was good for the 90s. Like, it worked really well to tell the story and have the internet, and I don't know, the artist depicted everything really well. I liked it a lot. It just hit the spot. And that is a 4-issue series called Venom Carnage Unleashed.
And you're done with the omnibus.
Yeah. And there was one more story after this one, but it was just a snippet. I guess there was a comic book called Spider-Man 2099 Venom. It was like a crossover. And Venom had a very small part in it, and they just showed like the 8 pages that he was in. You know how sometimes they do that in the omnibus?
Yeah.
Just to keep all his appearances in order. And there wasn't much there. But yeah, I don't know what I'm going to pick next, but I'm excited to pick another omnibus. I'd probably be Master of Kung Fu, because as I was cleaning, I'm like, I have 5 volumes of Master of Kung Fu. There's 2 magazine editions and 3 volumes, and I haven't read any of it. Like, I've never read Shang-Chi other than the stuff he's been in modern, you know, in the last 20 years.
Yeah. I haven't read any of it at all.
Well, Rob, you're up.
Yeah, so now I've got another unusual one I'm going to cover. It's what I'm going to cover now is actually a video game. So have either of you ever heard of City of Heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So City of Heroes was an online role-playing game that came out in 2004. It kept going until the company decided to terminate it and end production at the end of November of 2012.
Was it also role-playing before that, or no? Am I thinking of something else?
No, this is just during that time frame. 2004 to 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had first heard about it probably a couple of years or so, or maybe a year after it came out, and I figured I would actually go on and give it a try. Just because, you know, I mean, I wanted to see how it was to be able to create your own superheroes and stuff. And that's one of the things that was very robust about the game that everyone seemed to have liked, is that the character creator has so many different options in terms of costume creator. And it has a nice wide range of different types of archetypes and power sets that you can choose from as well. It's a game that I, like I said, started playing probably 2005, 2006, and I played right up until it went down in 2012. There had been talk that maybe they would sell the actual rights to another company or whatever, but nothing ended up happening. So if you cut to a couple months ago,
it's not true. There's an Image series called City of Heroes.
Oh yes,
by Mark Waid.
Yes, yes. You know what? I misunderstood what you were asking. Yes, because in order to play originally, you had to have you had to pay for a subscription, a monthly $15 subscription to play. And originally,
a company called Blue King actually started releasing City of Heroes comic books, and you would actually get one in the mail every month as part of your $15 subscription. So you would get the comic book, a physical comic book, and you would obviously be able to play the game and get the updates and all of that. That lasted only up until mid-2005, so it only lasted 12 issues. Then they did do the Image one, like you said, Mike, but that one was just a newsstand thing. So you would actually just, well, a comic shop thing. You'd actually go to the comic shop, you could buy it when it was Image. And that one lasted 20 issues, and I have a few of those. So, and then later down the road, it went free to play, and then you could, if you had a subscription, you had a whole bunch of extra bonuses that you would get in game if you wanted to keep paying for a subscription. But the majority of the stuff was actually free to anyone. After 2012, it stopped. Well, a couple months ago, there was an article that was that came up that apparently somebody somewhere and somehow got the code for the actual game, like all the coding necessary to actually run the game if you have a server. And the entire time it's been down, there was a secret group of people playing this game. They were playing the entire time, just on a privately owned server by invite only in a very small group of people, a couple thousand maybe in the world.
And you got invited?
I did not get invited.
Oh.
I did not get invited.
I was
so
excited.
Yeah, no, I did not get invited. However, once this came out, that there was this secret server, what they ended up doing was releasing the code out to like the public. Not the company that created the thing, but these people that had this the coding for the secret server. So some other sites or some other people that have, I guess, very good programming skills, they started putting this up, and now it's available for free for anyone to just go on and actually play. So I started playing a little bit again. Now that the kids the kids were just about to be born when this went off. They were born 3 months after this ended. So now that Zach and Allie are 6, they both actually will go on and play. Zach's playing right now on a laptop computer. The one thing nice about it is since it hasn't been updated since 2012, practically any laptop or regular computer you have these days, 6-7 years later, you can it can run the game because everything is so much newer now. So Zach's playing right now. Like I said, totally free to play. They started taking donations once a month to pay off whatever the server, like to pay off the actual server costs and stuff. These are just regular people that have families and jobs that are keeping this stuff running just in their spare time. And in both, so they'll take donations up until whatever their cost is met, and then they turn off the donations for the month. Both times I haven't been able to donate because the amount that they need has been satisfied within 15 to 20 minutes of them putting it up. So people are extremely grateful that this is back and seem to be very willing to contribute to keep it alive. It's an incredible amount of fun. If there's anybody that listens that wants any information about how to set this up on your computer and play, they can contact me on Twitter. But honestly, it's also it's not a 100% legal thing either, because this is all not being done by the actual company that created it. From what it sounds like, as long as nobody is making profits on it, it sounds like they're pretty much content to just let people play. And at this point, because the coding's out, it would almost be like whack-a-mole, like in order to, like cease and desist.
to shut down one server and then two more pop up somewhere else and then do a cease and desist on them and more pop up somewhere else. The coding's out there now for anyone that knows how to run that stuff. So be incredibly hard to put like the genie back in the bottle. But it's a ton of fun. Again, a game from 2004, but it has just so many, a wide range of things. And I'll be on one computer, Zach will be on the other. It's been a lot of fun to play with him now that he's getting a little bit older. So I just wanted to talk about that because I've been doing that a lot in the past few weeks, whenever I have a chance, and just been having a really good time playing a really old game that still holds up.
Yeah, and you get to share it with your son, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's cool that he enjoys it as much as he does, especially since he's just learning to read, and there's a lot that you have to kind of digest as you're going around and doing things. So he has a habit of just roaming around the city and just beating up bad guys wherever he sees them. But he's enjoying it quite a bit. So yeah, it's really cool. I just wanted to share that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that you had played that. I tried it briefly back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember why. I never got into it. I never played it like I played World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similar type game, but different yep. setting, not the
different
superhero
setting.
Thing.
Yeah, I think that in the bigger difference, I would say, aside from the setting, is that for whatever reason, this game seems to be, by and large, from what most people feel, very replayable in terms of creating character after character after character.
Yeah.
Where, at least for me, because I played World of Warcraft after this went down just to find something else to play, and I enjoyed mm-hmm. it a lot, but once I got up to like the higher level, I don't have the dedication or the time to do the stuff to like really like add all those extra special things to your characters. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't feel like making a new one and playing, upwards again. It didn't feel like it had that same replayability from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
That was just me personally. Maybe other people feel the same.
No, I got you. 'Cause I can definitely see that. Like what you're saying is definitely out some of the difference, yeah, because I know with City of Heroes that was always just tons of talk about, like you said, the character creator just having such a crazy amount of options and stuff compared to other games.
Yeah,
that people would just one of the things they would do is just make characters.
Yes, there's some people who are like, yeah, that's their thing. They just keep making alternate characters, and like they've got all of these characters, very very. Beginning levels, but they just love making the characters. And a couple of years after City of Heroes was released, they came out with a paid expansion, like a physical expansion in game stores, City of Villains. So then you could,
mm-hmm.
you could be a villain as well instead of being a hero. And then they implemented other things, like you could actually do an arc for your hero or your villain and have them, like let's say you start out a villain, you could start doing things to redeem yourself. And you become, instead of just a straight up villain, you become like a rogue that sometimes does things for good, sometimes doesn't, and could continue on to actually switch, end up being a hero. So you could go back and forth with characters depending on like what kind of thing you had in mind for your character. So they added a lot of options, and it was really, really, really well done. It's just that the larger corporation that owned it didn't want to put any more money into it. The funny thing is that I read just recently that if City of Heroes was on Steam, I think they said it would this past month it would be the third biggest game because of the number of people walking back to it now that it's available for people.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if these people, who again are just normal, this isn't their job.
Sounds like there's money to be made, though,
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing is like what's going to happen with that? And
right.
These people that are supporting this. You know, I from what I understand, they're looking at even releasing, like making new options and releasing, you know, things they used to call those issues. So you might have three issues come out a year, and each issue would maybe give you a new type of character to build or a new storyline or what have you. So they're looking at that too, because they know all the programming behind it. But the point is, if how much can they do on their own without attracting the attention of the company that legally owns this franchise, this property? Will that company at some point say, look at all these people playing, let's officially relaunch this and charge money again or something, you know?
Yeah, or even if like that company doesn't feel like doing it, like
somebody else, will they sell it? Is it something?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, because like maybe they don't want to, like, I don't know, do the work, but some other company. I mean, I bet there's already eyes on it, you know, just like watching to see if this is just you know, nostalgia that people are like they haven't had the opportunity, so they want to come back and like check it out for now. But then, like, will it die off quickly, or will the people stick around? If, like, you know, you might see somebody scoop it up and make a version you have to pay for again. You know,
yeah,
which would be interesting.
Exactly, and that's a big question. You know, how many people that are excited to come back and play will play for a month or maybe two, and then after that they're like, oh yeah, this was a lot of fun, but now I kind of remember getting out of this before. Now, you know, only play for a couple months and then die. I mean, I've already seen that for people that I got to, you know, quote unquote meet virtually, you know, in the game. They were all excited, they came back, they played for a week or so, and then I haven't seen them since. You know,
yeah,
and everyone's in a different point in their lives too. You know, it's 6 years later, so
yeah, it's definitely been interesting. It's kind of funny, like the timing of this too is like, because World of Warcraft, which never did go away and which has changed a ton, what makes it interesting is that they came out around a similar time. You know, WoW, I think, came out in like 2004 also.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, you know, that has always been super successful and like probably the most successful of that type of game. And they're able to, like a lot of these other type of games have gone free to play, and they make money by like selling microtransactions and stuff.
Yep. Yeah, that's what they ended up doing with City of Heroes, but
yeah. Like before it went away, yeah. And that's what almost all, like, there's only like two and that still can charge like a monthly fee, and Warcraft is one of them. And
what's the other, just out of curiosity, because I'm not familiar?
Final Fantasy 14.
Oh, okay.
That has a subscription fee too. Uh-huh. But anyway, yeah, I don't play Warcraft anymore either, but I follow video game news, and that's why I had heard about the City of Heroes stuff. And also what's happening right now as well is that people, with Warcraft being around so long, like people have private servers of like the original version of the game from, or like a close to version of the game, which they'll call like vanilla World of Warcraft. And, so people were playing those on private servers that, like, whatever, they don't like the way the game's changed in the years. So Blizzard, the company that makes the game, always said, well, we're never going to put out an older version of the game. We're never going to do that. And then over time, people just kept playing the old version of the game on free private servers. And so they eventually, like, changed their mind. And like this, in, like, a month or two, they're putting out World of Warcraft Classic.
Oh, really?
And you don't have to pay any extra for it, but you do have to like be a subscriber to World of Warcraft to play the classic version as well as like the current version. And I found it really amusing following the story, because like right now they're beta testing it, so a lot of people are playing it. And when players first started beta testing it, they
there were a lot of articles where like people were reporting bugs that were just like the way that things were. You know, so like people were like, you know, it just shows you like, you know, ruby colored glasses and all that. Like, or maybe these are just players that are curious about it, but never actually played it back in the day. But like they're reporting things as bugs to like the you know, because it's a beta test. And they're like, no, that's the way it's supposed to work. That's how things were back in the day. So again, I'm curious to see like all these people want this classic version, and like I'm curious to see, will it be successful, because you know, or will they just get their fill of it and go back to the like current version, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. I had no idea. Yeah
I find it kind of interesting that it's like happening at the same time as the City of Heroes stuff, you know?
Yeah,
but yeah, if some people were like when that news came out that had been, people had been playing the game for years in private and not sharing it with everyone, there were people that were really pissed.
Yes, I saw that. I was just like, oh, this, I can't believe that. I really wasn't.
Why were they pissed?
Because it wasn't shared with everyone else.
I mean, because there was a lot of people that were like really, really like more, even, you know, more so than Rob, like super into the game and stuff, and like really
they didn't get invited, so.
Yeah, we're really bummed when the game disappeared, and we're like, man, like I wish I could still play that and stuff. And then for like 7 years or whatever, like of like wishing they could play this game and not being able to find out that there were
people, it was always there. Yeah,
yeah, that there were people playing the game privately.
It must be legit game though, if you can get the diversity of like Rob's son and him playing, and both enjoying it.
Like, yeah, well, you enjoy it from a different level, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not... It must have some value at a certain level to attract his attention, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because things are very different now. Like,
absolutely.
If I try to show my nephews Space Invaders, you know, like, let's play Asteroids, and they're like, what the hell is this?
That's also a difference of like 40 something years versus a difference of like 7 years.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it's, I mean, honestly, yeah, I guess I can understand some people being upset. I personally never felt upset at all, even prior, like between the time with learning that it had existed and then them opening up for other people to do it. 6 years ago or 7 years ago, if they would have just made that public, it would immediately have gotten shut down.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just go from the company saying, no, we're not giving this away. We're not selling this to anybody. We're just shutting it down. And then somebody taking it themselves and start playing and inviting everybody publicly, they'll immediately be shut down. And that code will be that the code will not be out there. You know what I mean? This is the only way for it to have worked long term, is that enough time has passed that hopefully that company will continue to be like, you guys do whatever you want. Or like you said, maybe they'll end up selling it and it will live in a different way. But it's cool. It's fun to play. Mike, to your point, Zach and Allie aren't super, they don't play a ton of video games. So this is like one of the first. So he doesn't have a lot to compare it to. They do play some of those Lego games on like the PlayStation though, like Harry Potter and Star Wars and stuff.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's been fun. It's been a good time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I just have one other thing that is probably the shortest of the short things. And that is a little story from with Michael Gold and art from Legends of the Dark Knight. I don't know. So the table of contents don't have this story listed. It might be in Batman 303 because that's like, so it might have like, that's a story called If Justice Be Served, And so I don't know if this was also in that issue and came after it, because it's not, it doesn't have its own individual entry on the table of contents. So that might be where it's from. But it's a little backup tale called did I say it's Justice Be Served? Yeah, that's actually what this is. Okay, I'm crazy. Okay, so yeah, this is from Batman 303 for sure.
Okay,
I was getting confused because above, if Justice Be Served, it says Unsolved Cases of the Batman. And so this actually was also written by Denny O'Neill. And it starts off with Batman in the Batcave, and he says, "Okay, Alfred, this case goes into the time capsule instead of the regular files. If anyone ever gets into the Batcave, I wouldn't want them reading about it." So that's kind of an interesting start. And he says, basically after that, that the world should know what happened, but but only if the truth gets out after Batman's no longer around. And so he gets into the tale, and it's a hot, hot summer in Gotham, 107 degrees on a July afternoon. And as Bruce Wayne, he's playing tennis at the Gotham Club with a guy named Angus McCabe, who is a much older gentleman. And Bruce asks him, "Are you sure you want to play in this hot weather?" And he said, "It doesn't bother me none, boy. I grew up in the Death Valley, so let's play." And then, I'm laughing just because it's like they don't have the space in the story to like kind of give it room. So right in the next panel, Bruce, returns a serve, and Angus clutches his chest and drops to the court, and Bruce, trying to give him CPR, but Angus dies there on the court. So cut to Batman lurking on a rooftop and thinking about Angus. And interesting thing about Angus is that even though he was super rich, he continued to live in the worst neighborhood in Gotham. So as he's thinking about this, there's a shout for help. So he drops down, and there's a man in a suit. Batman recognizes him as Marty Rail, a reporter for the Graphic. And Marty says, "I'm being chased by a maniac." When Batman recognizes him, he says, "Yeah, does that mean you're not going to save me?" He's like, you shouldn't ask. But apparently the paper that he works for is like a real, like a muckraker tabloid kind of thing. But, Batman's not going to not save somebody because of that, of course. And so then he sees this guy that's chasing him. It's a huge guy. He's like 7 feet tall, 250 pounds of muscle. And Batman says, "Hold it, big boy. You have some explaining to do." Well, the guy just takes a swing at Batman. Batman ducks it and, chops him on either side of his neck and drops the guy. There's a guy sitting on his porch, probably drinking a beer or something nearby. He said, "Hey, Batman, you know who you just decked? That's Buzzy McCabe, Angus's kid." So he just had knocked out the guy that he had been playing tennis with back when. So he checks to see, make sure that Buzzy's not badly hurt, and he rushes down the block to where the McCabe mansion still is in this neighborhood. And he goes in and finds the housekeeper, and she says, that sneaky reporter stole everything. And Buzzy was actually chasing after this reporter who had broken into a safe in the mansion and stole what she says is everything. So Batman learns from the housekeeper that Buzzy was a stepson, that Angus adopted when he was 6 years old, and Buzzy was a resident of, like, you know, he'd come from the streets in that neighborhood, and that was actually why Angus had never moved, was he knew that Buzzy would only be comfortable really in the neighborhood where he grew up, so he stayed there. So it turns out that what was stolen was not money, but all like papers and souvenirs and stuff. And the main thing, the main detail in there that was important was the fact that in his youth, Angus had killed somebody. And there's documentation and like newspaper articles and stuff like that 50 years ago, back when he lived in Death Valley or near there. Batman goes back out, leaves the mansion, and there's actually a crowd of people there come running at him that are pissed because he punched Buzzy. The McCames are really well known and well liked in this neighborhood because Angus used, you know, spent tons of his money doing stuff for the neighborhood, feeding people and paying rent for people that couldn't pay the rent and stuff. So Batman gets out of there as quick as he can and tracks down this reporter. And when he gets there, Buzzy's recovered and Buzzy's there as well. And so this reporter, you know, he just wants to take advantage of this situation and make his own name, you know, to reveal to everybody that that Angus was a murderer, you know, back in his youth, and make his name as a reporter off of that. You know, not caring at all about the consequences. And Buzzy and him are fighting over the materials that the reporter stole, and the reporter pulls out a gun and shoots Buzzy in the stomach a bunch of times. Buzzy's momentum is carrying him forward at that point, and he, being such a big guy, like, and the reporter's is much smaller, his weight pushes the reporter back out through a window. Batman's just arriving. He tries desperately to try to catch on to the guy as he's falling, and he's not able to. So the guy hits the pavement and dies. Batman goes inside and, you know, goes to Buzzy as he's dying, and Buzzy's saying, "Not, it's not fair." And Batman tells him, "Life seldom is." So the police arrive, and Commissioner Gordon says, "What's this all? You know, what's this all about, Batman?" And he says, "I'm not prepared to say exactly." The story ends with Batman leaving and narrating just kind of his sentiment that that the truth in this situation is better left hidden, that the crime that Angus committed has been paid for a thousandfold in all of the good that he's done, and that it's better that Angus, the killer, is forgotten than that Angus, the kind man that did so much for other people, is remembered. So, interesting little story, kind of with like a different tone than you see in a lot of takes on Batman, and kind of you know, it doesn't involve any like super villains or anything like that. So I thought it was a neat little story.
Nice.
What's that?
How did you read that?
That's the same question I was going to ask.
What was the question? Where I read it?
Yes.
In the Legends of the Batman Michael Golden
digital
trade. Yes.
Yeah.
Through Hoopla.
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 That came out fast though, because that book just came out like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Hoopla gets the stuff almost like at the same time.
I didn't know that.
I think it's not like the same time. Usually it's not the same time as like you could get it through direct order. Mm-hmm. But I think it's usually like the same time that like Amazon or whatever would get it, like normal retailers.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to getting that DC Universe app because as soon as we do, I'm going to show the kids the Super Friends.
Nice.
I've never seen the Super Friends before.
You can watch Shazam drive around in a Winnebago, too.
Yeah. We might do that also.
They'll learn some valuable lessons.
Some life lessons.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. That's where I learned to be a good boy.
See? All thanks to Shazam.
That's right.
So, I guess you must have forgot over the years then.
Yeah, that's probably it. I have to do a refresher.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Rob, what do you got?
Oh, is it my turn again?
Yeah.
I thought it was your turn.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yeah.
I'll do a quick one. I read Fantastic Four 140. This also came from the Aaron Myers collection. And the big thing to point out about this book is it's the origin of Annihilus. Oh, and nice. What it turns out to, he's got a weird story, is the evolution of a character. He was like the first evolved in a world of monsters, and he was basically bullied. And that's why he became so bitter in life, is he was bullied into the point where he had to rule all these monsters. But the thing that's really interesting in this and makes me want to go back and read some more story of this is, by the way, it's by Jerry Conway and John Buscema, is Reed. Sue decides to leave Reed, and I don't know why, but she leave him and not tell him where she's going.
What issue was this?
140.
Okay.
So, Franklin, she takes Franklin away from her father. That's what's fascinating to me. They basically leave, and Reed is like not himself because he's like, wow, my wife left me. My son's gone. I haven't been able to get in contact with her. What the hell is going on? And then she contacts him in a message that gets interrupted, but it's basically, Reed, I need your help. There's something wrong with Franklin. And I don't know if this is when his powers were first manifesting or whatever was happening, but she basically got in a car and drove away with Franklin and then realized, holy crap, he's losing his powers manifesting or something's wrong. It didn't really explain it. A matter of fact, the thing makes this awesome remark that Medusa's on the team at this time, and the Torch has that red costume, which is very strange. I remember it, but I don't remember why he wore the red costume other than to stand out. But Medusa says to Reed, "You don't seem to be pleased to see us, Reed. What's wrong, brother-in-law?" And Thing says, "Medusa's right, Stretcho. You look about as happy as a preacher at an orgy." I just love it.
that's great.
That is awesome. And so he needs to go rescue her. He tracks her to a location on a farm.
Have you read this before, Mike?
No.
Oh, because I was wondering if you read this as a kid and you asked your mom or dad, what's an orgy?
Why is
I don't understand the reference.
Yeah, why is a preacher at the orgy? That stood out. I was like, I like that. I wish I would have read it because I think I'm going to get on the Marvel Unlimited app and try to read a few issues before and find out why Sue left.
Yeah.
Like, what did Reed do? I mean, he's always messing up, but...
He's always ignoring her.
Yeah. I don't know why she left. I want to know. And why did she take Franklin?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Annihilus invades and pretty much defeats the Fantastic Four entirely while this happens. But before that happens, they try to go to a farm and find Sue, because that's the where the last transmission came from. And her friends were there. They said she left several hours ago. So they follow the car, and the car's gone. The car's there, and there's tire tracks, but they're missing, and they don't know what happened. But Agatha Harkness showed up, that old lady, that old witch, and she took Franklin and Sue away. Not aggressively, but says, "Hey, you know, I've summoned you here. I need to let you know what's happening with Franklin." So there's that mystery, and that's. That was more interesting to me than the Annihilus defeating the Fantastic Four. is more or less why did they leave Reed, and why is Agatha Harkness know something that they don't know? Because she's a weird old lady.
She was around when I first started reading Fantastic Four, probably in like the 170s or whatever. I remember she was on a cover.
She showed up a couple times with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver too. Like she's like, I don't know what her issue is, but she doesn't seem like she's a bad lady. She seems more heroic on helps people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. Now you're up, Rob.
Yeah. I guess it's my turn again. Okay. So here's a comic book I'm going to talk about.
All right, if you can believe it.
Comic books. So this is my last one myself. I read this morning The Fox and the Crow, number 86.
Oh, nice. DC.
Yeah. I got it a while back. I don't even remember when I picked this up. But, so back from 1964. So it has a bunch of those, little short stories. Yeah. All with Fox and Crow. And it's very light reading, very entertaining. In the first one, Crow notices that the mailman drops a letter as he's walking by Crow's tree. Crow lives in a tree, and Fox lives next door in a house. So Crow picks up the letter, but it's like kind of like in the mud, and he gets his muddy print all over it, and he notices that it's addressed to his neighbor Fox. So he just slips it under his door. Well, Fox was right there at the time and sees this letter slip under the door. And he's like, oh, I wonder what this could be. And he's very excited about it. And so he's about to open it when he turns it over and he notices a black handprint. And he starts freaking out because it's a black hand letter. I don't know if that's really a thing. It's just something that they made up. But basically, it's him thinking that somebody is sending him a letter notifying him that they're going to do away with him. So he starts freaking out. He doesn't open the letter. He just starts freaking out and trying to figure out who it is. And then he says that really the only one that he really knows a decent amount is Crow. And so it must be coming from Crow. And why does Crow want to bump him off? And so he starts wondering, and he tries to go over to Crow's tree, and he can't get a hold of Crow. Crow's ignoring the door, and so he ends up climbing through the window, and Crow wants to be left alone right at that point, and so he kind of like kicks him out the window, and he lands on his head and gets knocked out. And So he goes running downstairs and notices that he still hadn't opened the letter. So he opens it up and finds out that it's from a duchess from somewhere that wants to invite Fox to high tea. And so it all works out in the end because he ends up, when Fox comes to, he ends up handing it to Fox. Fox is very excited about going to see high tea, but he wants Crow to watch his house while he's gone. So apparently Crow is very, he's always eating and mooching off of people. So he's very excited because then he's able to stay at Fox's house and he rates his fridge. So that was the end of that one. The next story was Crow is trying to, through experiments, trying to create rain from nothing. And he manages to create thunder. But Fox comes to see what the noise is and explains himself. And Fox explains to Crow that tons of people have tried to create rain out of nothing, and nobody's been able to do it. And he'll bet him $10 that Crow can't do it either. Well, turns out Crow does have the formula for it, and once he proves it to Fox turns over $5 or $10 rather, and he says that each time, if he can make it rain, each time he makes it rain, he'll give Crow $10. And then he goes off and he's thinking in his head, there's so many areas that could use rain that he'll give Crow $10 each time he does it. And then he'll be in charge of distributing the rain, Fox that is, and he'll be able to make a lot more than that by giving it to areas that actually need it. So Crow goes back into his tree and he's going to create another batch. And he says, well, it's a lot of work to create all this rain each time. So rather than doing that, making all these batches one at a time, I'm just going to make one very, very big batch that I can break up into small clouds. But by doing that, what happens is he creates an enormous storm cloud that actually cycles and becomes a tornado. And they get blown out to sea, and then they're just they've kind of learned their lesson and thankful that it wasn't a hurricane but only only an ordinary tornado
and that kills thousands of people.
Yeah, and that that they should have stopped when they, and Fox says, just stop while you're ahead. And Crow says, don't worry, Fox. I'm not doing that anymore. I just thought of a way to make a volcano. And so that's the end of that one. And then it has a little one-page thing with different blurbs about different animals. It's like an informational thing. It says, Ma Nature's Curiosity Shop. And it has different information like centipedes do not have 100 legs. They have about 40. And that jellyfish are 99.5% water. So just little tidbits. But then there's one more story. And let me just see. Oh, this one is that Fox is making some terrible noises in his house and bothering Crow. So Crow comes in and sees what he's doing while Fox is practicing the bassoon, because there is a music contest on the radio where he can win a vacation to Europe. So Crow says, well, you know what? I've got a triangle. Let me join you and we'll both win. Well, Crow just starts banging the triangle all over the place and he gets kicked out because Fox realizes he has no idea how to play even the triangle. So Crow gets upset, dresses in disguise, and comes and knocks on Fox's door, introducing himself as a professor that is a famous bassoonist and that he wants to come and coach him for free. So Fox is very excited because he figures his chances of winning this grand prize are going to go up. So he starts playing, and Crow tells him that he hit a sour note, and that on his bassoon, and that he needs to get rid of that sour note. So he cuts off a small piece of his bassoon and tells him to try again. So after a half an hour, there's nothing left of his bassoon but one little part and the mouthpiece. And as he blows it, he again tells Fox that he hit another sour note and that they need to get rid of that part too. And he protests and says, well, I only have the mouthpiece left. And he said, well, that'll be perfect, just the mouthpiece. So he blows that and he says that it sounds like a mouse squeaking. And Fox starts arguing with Crow. Crow pays off a mouse in cheese to have him come and run up to Fox and call him daddy the next time he plays the bassoon mouthpiece, which he does. So he gets upset and he says, you're right, I'm never going to touch a bassoon again. And so Crow walks away thinking that he did it. He can relax. Now Foxy's not going to win this prize without him. And a couple days later, he comes running into Crow's tree, very excited. He said, do you know what happened? A bassoon expert convinced me I couldn't play bassoon. And Crow says, well, why is that wonderful? And Fox says, well, I never thought to play your triangle, because he left it there on his floor. And he said, I won the contest playing the triangle, so now I'm off to Europe. And so Crow is now doubly upset because Fox is going away on his cruise or his trip to Europe, and he won the prize
because of the triangle.
Exactly. Yeah. So these were fun, you know, like four or five page stories. Something that I picked up a while back, just an older issue of something that was a little lighthearted. So that was a lot of fun.
Very cool.
So that's all I got.
All righty. Any closing statements before we wrap up?
Eat your vegetables.
Eat your vegetables.
Buy.
Especially when you only eat vegetables, right, Chris?
That's true.
Then you have to live. Yes.
Yeah. Stay alive. I just want to employ people to buy
eat
more
your
comic
vegetables.
Books.
It's coming from a vegan.
I'm not a vegan.
Yeah, you're not. You eat your fish. You and Bill hate fish, so you.
Yeah. We're enemies of the sea. Fish.
Yeah. Those fish, they deserve to die.
Mm-hmm. And I hope they burn in hell.
All what right, well.
No comments?
I think we can wrap this one up. Put this in the archives. Yeah. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com and on Facebook, for those of you that go there, at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, follow the episode threads there. At MythMakingETC on Twitter. I can remember it now. It wasn't Monkey Computer Head or whatever it was.
Monkey Computer Head. We won't
talk about that.
At Rob Krieger and at Mike Myers Brunch. Rob's is the easiest.
Yeah.
It's just me.
It's just you.
It's just you.
Yeah. And I think that's about it.
Yeah, so I think so too.
I don't know if I'll be... No, I'll be here in 2 weeks. Because I'll be at Heroes next week.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Now I'll be celebrating Father's Day by watching some... Super Friends with the kids.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
Especially if
Chris,
you
what
watch
will you be doing?
Challenge of the Super Friends.
Next Sunday?
Yeah.
For Father's Day? I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
Happy Father's Day to all you fathers, and we'll catch you again in 2 weeks. If everything works out. Because it is summertime.
Right. Yeah.
You never know.
Have a good Sunday, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.